Next week, if all goes as planned, California condors will soar over northern Arizona. The birds to be released were raised in captivity as part of a $20 million effort to save the species. 17 condors have already been reintroduced in California. Biologists want to foster a second population in Arizona, where the birds lived 10,000 years ago. But some state residents say protecting rare species has already cost the region jobs, and they're concerned about the consequences of letting the condors loose. NPR's Howard Berkus has a report.
Just after dawn, in a broad Arizona valley of sagebrush and sand, Eric Howard peers through binoculars to the top of a red rock cliff tinged with snow.
Sun's just sort of breaking on the hack box up there, and the hack box is essentially a big old chicken coop where these huge birds are up there, and half of it's enclosed, a plywood structure, and the part that we can see is a big net enclosure. The birds come out of the hack box in the morning, about right now as the sun's breaking on them, and they are testing their flight feathers. These are juvenile birds, very young. They haven't flown yet, and obviously they're looking out on this beautiful valley and just waiting for the chance to hurl themselves off the cliff here in a couple of weeks.
Are you anticipating that as well?
Oh yeah, it's going to be a great day. Sort of a sense of putting a piece back in the puzzle that's been missing for a long time.
As a spokesman for the Grand Canyon Trust, a regional environmental group, Howard savors the moment he imagines when six California condors glide above him, black and white wings on blue sky, spreading almost 10 feet from wingtip to wingtip.
This is a big old bird, the largest bird in North America. You know, it's one of these charismatic megafauna, we call it, that everyone kind of rallies behind. And because of that, it's a symbol. It's a creature that used to be found here, that was successful here. Human activity essentially drove it out. And so it's very gratifying that human effort and human activity is being spent to bring it back.
Through windshield wipers and raindrops, Joy Jordan sees a different kind of symbol in the California condor. She drives into an empty parking lot outside Fredonia, Arizona, 40 miles across a forested plateau from the condor perch.
We're at the east end of the area that was Kaibab Industries, where they had their sawmill and their planer. And down this road on both sides would be huge stacks of lumber. And it's like going through a city with tall buildings. It was a busy, busy industrial hub right here.
And what's here now?
Tumbleweeds. Dead tumbleweeds. They've shut down completely. Everything's gone.
What does the closure of the mill have to do with concern about the California condor being reintroduced into this area?
We feel like the California condor is a tool that extreme environmentalists can and do use to stop us from doing anything to earn a decent living here. And we're afraid that the California condor would give them another tool to do that with.
Other rare birds, the goshawk and Mexican spotted owl, are blamed in part for the shutdown of the Fredonia Mill. They're among the rare species people rattle off here as easily as they name their own children.
Well, after Utah prairie dogs, after desert tortoises, after the Kanab amber snail, the coral pink sand dunes tiger beetle, still the Mexican spotted owl, the prospects of having an animal that would soar and range for over 100 miles per day was kind of like the B-52 bombers were coming, and my God, what would be next?
Jim Madsen used to run the Fredonia sawmill and now heads a group in the neighboring Utah town of Kanab, which promotes economic development and scrutinizes environmental regulation. Rare animals are threats, he says, because most of the land in the region is government-owned. As little as 5% is in private hands, use of even that land can be restricted if endangered species use it.
Why would anybody really in their right mind say, sure, bring in an endangered species and let it soar all over the countryside? So the first thing that showed up on everybody's list or agenda was, oh my God, what now?
When the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service called a meeting in Kanab to brief local people, they confronted Robert Mesta, the agency biologist directing the condor recovery effort. Mesta's campaign for condors has left his voice raspy and hoarse.
We came here, and we hit a stone wall. and we were slammed. I mean, you could cut the tension and hate in the room with a knife. It was so thick, you know, and it was directed at me. I had the attention of, I don't know, 100 plus people that were just venting just years and years of frustration, you know, with the federal government on me, you know, and I was in total shock, to tell you the truth.
Mesta was surprised because the condor is generally accepted in California, where he's based. And it's a benign bird, he says. It doesn't kill, it scavenges, eating dead and decaying animals. Mesta whispers this while watching the condors he'll release soon from a plywood blind, disguised with pinyon branches and rocks.
They don't threaten anything like the livestock industry. They don't nest in large trees, so they're no threat to the timber industry. They're no threat to the mineral extraction industry because most of that's underground. The recreational industry that exists up here, I mean, they'll help promote that. So really, California condors actually amount to a plus to the communities in this particular area.
Mesta pauses as the condors flex their wings, then huddle together for warmth. There's more at stake than their survival, he says, in their planned release here.
We're going to have to take an endangered species, reintroduce it into its former habitat, and do it in such a manner that it's compatible with the existing land uses in the area, and it doesn't threaten any of the local communities. Once we prove that we can do that, well, then it'll pave the way for an easier effort for other endangered species.
This was the challenge Mesta faced when he left that bruising meeting in Kanab, Utah. The condor release was suspended. The group in Kanab considered lawsuits and lobbying to stop it forever. One Utah county did sue on its own, but the case was quickly dismissed. It was a classic standoff, except Robert Mesta kept going back to Kanab.
We had a situation where we had to sit down and talk to these people. You know, we had to make sure that they had an opportunity to be heard, and that's what the Fish and Wildlife Service did.
Joy Jordan of Fredonia and Jim Madsen of Kanab were impressed.
There was an element within the Fish and Wildlife Service that said, let's get past all that stuff. Let's work out things that truly benefit the condor and what it needs.
We didn't believe it was possible, but we decided we'd give it a try.
And it was from sitting across the table and eye to eye, looking to see that, you know, that both parties were sincere.
It's extraordinary to me to think that the government has worked with us.
You know, skeptics sat at the table, came away from that saying, well, if that works, let's try it.
The government had something to offer. A special section of the Endangered Species Act, which declares a rare creature experimental and non-essential. The Arizona condors, Mesta told the group, are not critical to the survival of the entire species, and their release is, in effect, an experiment. They're not even considered endangered in their Utah and Arizona range, so there are virtually no restrictions on people's activities there. Mesta put this in the form of a contract with towns and cities, and vowed to recapture the condors and send them elsewhere if the terms change. Joy Jordan of Fredonia.
I'd say there's probably still at least 50% of the people that do not believe that this is going to protect us. They believe that the government or the extreme environmentalists will find some way around to do what they want to do.
Did this agreement change your view of the condor coming here?
Yes, it did. I feel like we're pretty well protected. I suppose there's always something that you cannot foresee, but I feel good about it. In fact, I'm kind of anxious to go out and see them. I think it'll be fun to see them. But I do have to say that I wish they could have picked a better-looking bird. I have never seen an uglier bird in my life.
Condors do have hairless heads and necks covered with splotched and wrinkled skin. They're best viewed from a distance, some say. The condor agreement was resisted initially inside the Fish and Wildlife Service, and it still divides environmentalists. Eric Howard of the Grand Canyon Trust points around him in the valley below the condor's perch and says he likes the agreement.
It allows these ranchers to run these cows we see right out here. It allows hikers to hike in Buckskin Gulch right up here. And it allows hunters to hunt up there on the Paria Wilderness and bird watchers to come right here where you and I are standing and watch these magnificent creatures. And I think it dispels the notion that the Endangered Species Act is some sort of a draconian and inflexible law.
But it also creates a new myth about the act, argues Kathleen Rogers of the National Audubon Society, speaking by phone from her office in Washington.
It took us a lot to destroy what was created here for hundreds and hundreds of years, it's going to cost us something to bring back species. So signing agreements with people and allowing the public to believe that they can recover species in a painless and inexpensive way is just not realistic.
Rogers concedes that it may be realistic for the California condor in Utah and Arizona, because the region is sparsely populated and most of the land is already owned and managed by the federal government. But she worries that the experimental and non-essential designations will be applied to species that really do need the full protection of the Endangered Species Act.
You can expect landowners to come back to the Fish and Wildlife Service and ask them to do the same sort of thing in their area. We're just concerned that it may be replicated elsewhere. So in effect, this sort of status will be available to everybody because of the concern that the Endangered Species Act is meeting so much resistance. The Fish and Wildlife Service, in its attempt to do the right thing, would acquiesce too easily to other requests for similar treatment.
Back at the top of the cliff, in the blind facing the condor pen, Robert Mesta points to a golden eagle soaring just above the captive condors. They'll use the same thermal winds, he says, when they're released, and they'll use them repeatedly, like we use highways. This is a perfect place for condors, Mesta says, and this is the best way now to reintroduce endangered species.
The current political climate is extremely critical of operations like this, so we need to demonstrate that we can be successful. So there's a lot riding on the success of this program.
Next week, Mesta gets his chance to show that, as netting is removed from the condor's pen, and they get to fly free, once again, over Arizona and Utah. This is Howard Berkus reporting.
You gotta wonder what they're thinking. You know, they're all lined up, looking outside the pen, watching everything that goes on. Condors don't miss a trick, you know, despite the